Did you see this man in that court in Madison, Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. And of course, during the oral deposition, I was there the whole time. That took over 3 hours. And when the trial for damages, he was in the courtroom with me, too. He was there at the table for the plaintiff.
Okay. So this man, purported to be Leonard Posner, was in Madison, Wisconsin, in court with Fetzer. But then 60 Minutes peddles this guy out and tells the American people that's Leonard Posner? Is that
what you're saying?
Did that actually air on 60 Minutes? Did they ever broadcast?
Oh, sure. Absolutely, 100%. Yes, it did.
Hey, friends. Welcome back. Thank you so very much for Click and Play. Sean from SGT Report here. That was my friend Dr. James Fetzer, another persecuted patriot. He joins a long list of patriots now being persecuted by a criminal government. Dr. Fetzer is being persecuted for daring to question what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary in December of 2012. And this one has a couple of absolutely mind-blowing moments in it. Information that you've never heard that will make you think, this has to be an episode of Black Mirror. Buckle up. I think this is an extremely important broadcast, and I thank you for tuning in. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. There have never been more medical breakthroughs than there are right now. So why are millions of Americans more unhealthy and overweight than they've ever been? According to U.S. board-certified physician and expert nutritionist, Dr. Amy Lee, one of the main reasons is three harmful foods that have been passed off as health foods all over the country. And wait until you hear this. Because these foods can cause weight gain, clog your digestive tract, deplete your energy, and wreck your skin, they're banned in other countries. Yet, shockingly, they're still legal in the U.S. And it's time someone shined a light on what they are. And Dr. Amy Lee does just that, while explaining how the side effects from these foods are wreaking havoc on the health of millions of Americans. The great news is it's easy to stop and reverse this damage by simply learning which foods to avoid and how to spot them. And by doing so, you can experience easier weight loss, smooth digestion, and vibrant energy. To find out these three fake foods, go to 3harmfulfoods.com/SGT. That's 3harmfulfoods.com/SGT. I'll leave a link below this video. After years of extensive study, Dr. Amy Lee put together a revealing video totally free to the public, so you never get duped by these foods again. Find out all you need to know to regain control over your body at 3harmfulfoods.com/SGT. The link is below this video. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so very, very much for tuning in to SGT Report. We pride ourselves on trying to bring you the truth as we see it, always speaking candidly and from the heart. And today, we're going to serve up some truth for you that's very Kafka-esque. And in fact, it was Franz Kafka who said, and I quote, "The truth is always an abyss." As Western nations fall into a tyranny, the likes of which most of us have never experienced, the courts are leading the way. And this just happened in the United Kingdom.
Went on to say that you did not want your money going to immigrants who, quote, rape our kids and get priority, end quote. This offence is so serious that an immediate custodial sentence is unavoidable. Would you stand, please? The sentence that I passed has been reduced by one third to reflect your guilty plea. The sentence is one of 20 months imprisonment.
Yeah, Alex Jones can't even believe it, but Alex Jones is a victim of the same Bar Association and criminal courts, the same courts that are now coming after Dr. Jim Fetzer. We'll bring him on in just 1 second. The same courts that railroaded Alex Jones into a billion-dollar judgment, the same courts that just found Gold Star mom, 68-year-old Tina Peters, guilty of some sort of election crime when she was merely trying to defend the elections against being stolen in the state of Colorado. Friends, the truth is always an abyss. In my experience, James Fetzer, PhD, is not a quack, nor is he insane. However, if the official story about the events on December 14th, 2012, in Newton, Connecticut, at Sandy Hook Elementary are 100% true. If they are 100% true, then what is alleged by Dr. Fetzer in his defendant's brief, which we're about to go through, well, then he is off his rocker. And I'll let you, dear audience, be the judge. Dr. Fetzer, how are you,
sir? I love that, Sean. I love that. Yeah, even members of my own family aren't convinced that I have all my marbles, so I don't mind that at all. But the fact is, what you're going to learn through this exercise, you got a case that was first filed in 2018, so it's dragged on now for 6 years. I have a motion to reopen the case on the basis of extrinsic fraud and fraud upon the court, where extrinsic fraud is some event that occurred outside of the courtroom is being grossly misrepresented, typically for political purposes, as of course was the case here. And then fraud within the court when it's introduced into the courtroom to bring about a legal end that would not be obtainable absent the introduction of the extrinsic fraud, and where you'll discover I'm alleging with a mountain of evidence, very detailed, specific proof, that the judge and the two attorneys or the team of the plaintiffs that brought the charge against me, ostensibly by a fellow called Leonard Posner, who's actually a legal fiction, whose real name is Reuben Vabner, over the death of his purported son, Noah Posner, another legal fiction who is made out of photographs of his real son, Michael Vabner, when he was a child, for purportedly defaming him by describing a death certificate that had no file number, no town or state certification, that he himself had provided to my research colleague, Kelly Watt, as fake. When, because it's incomplete under Connecticut law alone, Sean, even parents are not allowed to have incomplete death certificates. But where in the course of the proceeding, he systematically eliminated all the proof I had by simply not admitting it as evidence. This is a concept most Americans don't appreciate. You can have submissions to a court, and they can be accepted by the court and docketed, so they have a file numbers to the date they were accepted. They can contain absolutely sterling proof, in this case, vindicating me completely from the beginning, from any offense. But if they're not accepted by the court as evidence, they don't count. They don't matter.
How can you defend yourself when the courts won't allow you to present evidence or forensic experts that might be able to speak on your behalf or speak about the authenticity of death certificates? So let's just slow down for 1 second. I want to go back and I want to remind people that whenever these events happen, the official story never entirely adds up, because on day one, whether it's 9/11 or the 7/7 bombings, there is always evidence that comes out during that first day, during the second day, that often goes down the memory hole thereafter. So I don't know exactly what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary. But again, if the official story is 100% true, then why did we never hear a word more about this?
They did walk a guy out of the woods. I saw him walk a guy out earlier with handcuffs. Figuring. He walked by us and said he didn't do it.
It was a grown man.
A grown man. Yeah, he's sitting in the front of the police car over there now. So, I mean,
he didn't have a gun.
No, I didn't see any gun. Just had him handcuffed, and he walked by us and looked into parents' eyes and said, I didn't do it.
How was he dressed?
Camo pants with a dark jacket.
Okay, again, I don't want to muddy the waters here, but how are we to know what really happens in these events when the official story, parroted by the mainstream horror CIA Mockingbird media, is always out within the first 24 hours, usually within the first hour? You know, it's like Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, he acted alone. We all know that now. Well, Jim Fetzer's written books about it. Jim Fetzer, in my view, is not a quack. He's led the way on the JFK assassination to find the truth on 9/11. So I just wanted to make that point before we get rolling here. So let's slow down. Let's back up. And I want to show you guys the defendant's brief, and we'll take you through this. And you decide whether you think Dr. Fetzer is a quack who should pay more than $1 million to Leonard Posner for libel. The legal lynching of a Sandy Hook truth seeker. I want to scroll down to page 7. By the way, this will probably be the background thumbnail I use for this show. So the defendant's reply right here, page 7. Circuit Court Judge Remington denied James Fetzer's request for relief from judgment. Now, the question is, was the judge acting in collusion with Leonard Posner's attorneys? Because he suppressed the affidavit of Kelly Watt, who evidently can point to the death certificate of Noah Posner being fake. So that's what I wanted to slow down. I just want to start there, James. So take us through it. Why did you believe the death certificate for Noah Posner from Newton, Connecticut was fake? And how could you prove that?
Well, because I'd brought together 13 experts and we concluded that nobody died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. If you go all the way back to the very first slide, or the second, Sean, actually, Kevin Barrett was in the courtroom during the trial for damages. Now, what happened is this occurred in two different parts. There was the main case, which was determined whether or not I were guilty of the offense alleged, which was defamation, by stating in three sentences in the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, that the death certificate was fake. And one sentence in a second publication, a memorandum on Sandy Hook Truth that I co-edited with Robert David Steele for then-President Donald Trump, where I had a mass of evidence that nobody had died at Sandy Hook, but where the judge systematically excluded all my evidence. He did a series of deft moves to lead it to the situation where there is no evidence on my side at all to dispute the facts being presented by the plaintiff. So if you go back, Sean, to that third, what we got here is that I have now been appealing efforts by the judge to suppress my attempts to reopen the case for extrinsic fraud and fraud upon the court. So I've gone up to the Court of Appeals here. Go to the next slide and you'll see what I have done is to have submitted that motion to open judgment. Here, I'll just go through it quickly. In a typical brief or appeal, you have various sections, you know, about what the issues are and how they should be dealt with, and then you have an argument. Here's a statement of the case. Statement of case presented by Dr. Fetzer in his motion to open judgment pursuant to extrinsic fraud and fraud upon the court dated June 17, 2024, which is attached as Exhibit B, requires supplementation only by recent proceedings addressed above, which along with other documents submitted in this case in the past are hereby incorporated and reaffirmed lest this court be subject to redundant repeating. Now, what happened, Sean, is when I submitted this motion to reopen the case, the judge was rattled, and he committed several blunders violating my due process rights. What happens is, when there's a motion, it has to be docketed, a briefing schedule published that allows the other party, in this case, since I issued the motion and I'm the defendant, the plaintiff, to respond, and then I have an opportunity to reply. That's absolutely fundamental to Wisconsin rules of civil procedure. But he didn't do that. He was, I think, so shaken by what I had there, this massive evidence, including 26 exhibits, 548 pages of evidence that I had submitted to the court, that he simply rejected it without going through the process of distributing for a response and a reply. Thus, here is a statement of the facts. Dr. Fetzer submitted his motion to open judgment pursuant to extrinsic fraud and fraud upon the court on June 17, 2024. The Circuit Court Judge Remington issued his decision in order denying James Fetzer's motion for relief from judgment on June 20th, 2024, without going through those steps. Dr. Fetzer submitted his request for relief from judgment order on June 20th, 2024, where I pointed out he couldn't do what he'd done.
Can I interrupt? Let's just slow this down a little bit, because when we get into the legal ease, sometimes people start to check out. And I really want to get to the evidence of the fraud against you. In my view, I'm alleging that there was fraud done against you because you were disallowed from providing evidence to defend yourself. So, two death certificates. There were two death certificates.
Let me set that up because
the first one was provided to Kelly Watts. So just set the stage for that, will you?
Absolutely, Sean. The death certificate that I published in the book and declared three times to be fake had been provided by Posner, who had become the plaintiff in the case, and some could suspect, therefore, he was there by baiting the hook, was given by Gelliwat to me, and we published a chapter in the book about it, where this death certificate had no file number, no town certification that it's accurate, no state certification that it's a true copy, where because it was incomplete, it was already in violation of Connecticut law that does not even allow parents to have an incomplete death certificate. Now, this is a death certificate I declared four times in two different publications to be fake. Now, when they submitted the complaint to me, they attached a different and complete death certificate that had a file number, the town and the state certification, which they declared in the complaint was not materially different from the death certificate that Leonard Posner had given to Gelliwat. But of course, not having a file number, not having town or state, those were all material differences. So it took me forever to figure out what was going on here, because on its face, this was absurd. Well, here's how it would play out. They were planting the seed of their overall strategy, which was going to be, and I never really realized what they were going to do until the middle of the oral hearing, when they declared that what Leonard Posner had given to Gelliwat had been the same as the one attached to the death certificate with a file number, town and state, and somehow she or I had removed those features to create the death certificate that was published in the book as fake.
No, my.
And, I mean, yeah, that would be their gambit. But it took me forever to sort it out. I mean, actually, it was sorting that out that was the key to my reopening the case, when in addition we had evidence substantiating my conclusion at the time that a witness they had introduced under oath as Leonard Posner was not Leonard Posner. In other words, they suborned perjury, Sean, by bringing in a fake witness posing as Leonard Posner. I had protested this at the time. I had gone so far as to suggest when they wanted to do a DNA analysis to show Noah Posner was the son of Reuben Vabner, of Leonard Posner, which I knew would come out positive because the party they were treating as Noah Posner was actually Michael Vabner, who is a son of Reuben Vabner, who is the real person behind the legal fiction of Leonard Posner.
Well, let me jump in again, because you've jumped ahead and now I'm getting a little confused, and I don't want the audience to be confused because this is really easy to understand. I read through this entire brief and I've got notes here. So let's just go to page 33 before we get to Leonard Posner and the potentiality of that person showing up in court purporting to be him, not actually being Leonard Posner. So let's back up just a little bit. So Dr. Fetzer provided reports of two forensic document experts, Larry Wickstrom and A.P. Robertson, who found not only that the incomplete death certificate published by Dr. Fetzer was fake, but the complete death certificate attached to the complaint was also fake. So the judge would not allow you to present the testimony of your two forensic experts. Is that correct?
Yeah, he wouldn't accept their reports as evidence. In other words, I submitted them. They were proof exonerating me, but he wouldn't allow it to be considered as evidence to preserve no disputed facts. He dismissed them as someone else's opinion and said, I just don't think they were helpful. Their uncontested reports, again, vitiated the case against me by proving my statements were true.
And you have no reason. Look, I've known you for a long time, Dr. Fetzer. You would have absolutely no reason. By the way, you've got integrity. So you would never alter a death certificate for a Noah Posner to create a fable in which your narrative would be that this whole thing was staged and that Noah Posner's death certificate was not real. You didn't alter that death certificate, which appeared in your book, did you?
Of course not. And get this, there was even an affidavit that I'd submitted from Kelly Watts saying that the death certificate published in the book was the same one that Posner had presented to her. That's the very first point I make here. They buried that, too, because it blows the case apart. No, up at the top, number one, point number one. There it is.
Right there.
There it is, yeah. First argument. Judge Remington suppressed the affidavit of Kelly Watt. His approach was to manufacture a predetermined outcome by finding that Dr. Fetzer had libeled Leonard Posner by declaring a death certificate that Posner himself had provided to Dr. Fetzer's research colleague, Kelly Watt, to be fake. It was done by substituting a different and complete death certificate in the complaint. A published death certificate, unlike the substitution, had no file number nor town or state certification under Connecticut law. Not even parents are allowed to possess incomplete death certificates. Kelly Watt's affidavit exposes the fraud and thus vitiates the case against Dr. Fetzer, but was suppressed by Judge Remington in collusion with the Posner attorneys. And if you go to the next slide, Sean, we're going to find that's the first page of her affidavit. In court proceedings, if you don't submit an entire document, you submit the first page and then the part you want to emphasize, which is the next page. Go to the next. This is see, look at 22. A copy of the death certificate that plaintiff sent to me, Kelly Watt, appears on page 181 of Chapter 11 and appears to be indistinguishable from Exhibit H, a plaintiff's answer to plaintiff's response and objection to defendant's second set of requests for admission. What Kelly is saying, if you go to the next slide, Sean, then, is that the death certificate here at the bottom, yeah, that's the same one that she was given by Leonard Posner, and I have no doubt about it. And if you notice, there's no file number in the upper right-hand corner, and there's no town or state certification on the left-hand side or the bottom. If you go to the next, you'll see the one attached to the complaint. No, that's the same as the one that we had. Go again. Right, there you go. See how there's a file number on the side, on the top, handwritten, and there's a certification on the left-hand side that's a state, and there should be at the bottom. Go down one more. I mean, we'll find. I think I got all four of them in here. Yeah, there's the town certification of the Bobby with Debbie Aurelia's signature there, rubber stamp. This is the third of the four death certificates, which has a partial printed file number, unlike the hand printed file number. I mean, Sean, there are four different versions of the death certificate. You think any reasonable person would say something's very fishy here, that there are four different death certificates or versions of the death certificate. And would you believe during the oral hearing, Sean, he introduced a fifth without prior notice, which, by the way, was also a violation of due process, my rights as a defendant.
Well, let me just jump in and say how interesting that Alex Jones was found guilty. And I guess a civil trial for nearly $1 billion in damages for merely asking questions about this exact same topic, Sandy Hook. I mean, how curious. And my friend Sophia Smallstorm, who's been on the show so many times, she has always said that this was a FEMA capstone event. I think you agree with that. So why is it so important for officialdom to defend this story so much so that they bring it back out to the light by persecuting those who would dare question it?
Well, that's the idea, that anyone who raises this question is going to be pilloried. I mean, they set up Alex. They set him up as an example. But if you raise a question about Sandy Hook, that you could wind up, you know, facing massive fines like Alex. Yeah, that's just what you got there, some of the proof.
There's an OMG moment, actually, in this brief that I want to share with the audience, and that's on page 48. But we don't have to rush to get there, so you take us where you want to go.
Well, Sean, I would go back then, just go systematically. We were looking at the very first point I make in my defendant's reply brief. Yeah, just go down, and you'll see here we go, right. Judge Remington dismissed proof that nobody died at San. I've broken it down into seven key points of the way in which the judge excluded all my evidence so we could have no disputed facts and apply a summary judgment procedure that denied my right to a trial by jury.
Well, and that brings up another point. In Alex Jones' civil trial, he was not allowed to present any evidence to defend himself. The judge literally declared him guilty and told the jury, "Jury, your job is not to find this man innocent or guilty. He's already guilty. Your job is to determine how much money he should pay those who he so gravely offended by questioning the official story." So again,
that's right.
This is not, by the way, I'm not alleging that nobody died at Sandy Hook at this point, okay? But the truth of the matter is, you cannot question this event without potentially getting sued. So what I'm doing here, the reason I wanted to have this conversation with you, is to just show the audience, our dear listeners, that the courts are nearly as crooked here in the United States, maybe just as crooked as they are in the UK. And in the UK right now, they're putting people in prison for 20 months for daring to speak out against illegal immigration and immigrants raping women and girls. 20 months in prison while the immigrants can rape and pillage and they don't go to jail. Okay, so this is literally the fall of Western society. If we don't have judges and courts that can find truth and that will dictate justice and serve justice, then we don't have a nation. We are already in Kafka's nightmarish communist hellhole. So that's the reason for this conversation, James.
Oh, John, I think you got it right. So Remington dismissed proof that nobody died Sandy Hook. Again, see, I was submitting all this proof, but he wasn't admitting it as evidence. That meant from a legal point of view, it didn't count. It might as well have not existed. Judge Remington excluded Dr. Petzert's proof that nobody died at Sandy Hook on both legally and logically absurd grounds. When he declared that, whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened or not is not relevant to this, the truthfulness or the accuracy of a death certificate that states that the decedent died on December 14, 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. Once again, the proof amassed in Dr. Petzert's co-edited book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, it was a FEMA drill to promote gun control, 2015, second edition, 2016, was inconsistent with Bosner's position, thereby producing disputed facts that, had they been admitted, required a jury. So this is just where I show you where the judge actually says, as I say, this is the very first page of the scheduling conference. And if you go down on the next, you'll say, see, look at that paragraph right there to the bottom, whether or not Sandy Hook, this is the transcript directly from whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened or not is not relevant to this, the truth of it or the accuracy of the death certificate. Now, I understand the defendant's overall theory in believing that it never happened. And I'm not going to take the bait and let this case go down that path and into that rabbit hole. Whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened is for another day in another place. The only question for me is to guide the parties into engaging in discovery that either proves a death certificate was true, was real, was accurate, and legitimate or not. So I'm not concerned with Mr. Posner's litigation against, quote, Sandy Hook skeptics. That's not relevant and unlikely to lead to the discovery of anything relevant that will be admitted in this court. Now, that's all you need from that, Sean. Look at the point, though. If nobody died at Sandy Hook, then obviously the death certificate is fraudulent because it's a death certificate for a party that ostensibly died at Sandy Hook. And if you look at slide number 20, you see, this is an overview from the back of the book of the monster. The next slide, Sean, the next slide, 21, yeah. If you could center that. It was proof it was a drill before our very eyes. We actually went through this during the last conversation. The sign, everyone must check in. Boxes of bottled water and pizza cart, porta potty present from scratch, many wearing name tags on lanyard, parents bringing children to the scene. Proof it wasn't a massacre was also there. No surge of EMTs into the building. No medevac helicopter was called. No string of ambulance to the school. No evacuation of 469 other students. No bodies placed on the triage carps. I had all this submitted to him as proof, but he wouldn't admit it as evidence.
Let me ask you this. So the bar for proving libel and slander is awfully darn high. And you being a media personality, you being somebody who has authored books, you being somebody who has hosted shows and been on shows as guests, why wouldn't the bar be much, much higher? Like, what is the crime here? What is the alleged crime that you've committed by merely questioning this event and questioning the authenticity of the death certificate of this young boy? What is the crime in that? In a free country where we're supposed to have free speech. I mean, it's clear we don't really anymore. I mean, I got kicked off of YouTube in 2020 without cause, without reason, terminated. What are they alleging? What is the crime here, Jim?
John, it was manufactured. It's like, you know, Donald Trump, his case in New York City. He didn't do the accounting. He didn't make the entries. Alvin Bragg manufactured a case by claiming this misdemeanor was in furtherance of another crime, the nature of which he never specified, and therefore became a felony. I said the death certificate was fake. The attorney said that implied that I was saying that Leonard Posner had faked the death certificate, which I hadn't done. I don't mention Leonard Posner there. I don't affirm anyone who said who was responsible or not. This just shows now here, this slide, the depth of the evidence I had that the judge would not admit. This was Paul Preston. Paul Preston was himself a school administrator who supervised shooting drills, active shooter drills. And because he was so disturbed by what he saw broadcast from Newtown that day, he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, each of whom confirmed to him of their own personal knowledge that it had been a drill, no children had been killed, and it had been done to promote an anti-gun agenda. He explained all that during an interview with our friend Sophia. But that's in the book, too, see? Well, this kind of stuff just makes a lie out of the claim that, you know, by declaring a death certificate fake, I was saying something false. And, of course, by no stretch was I implicating Leonard Posner, but that's how they argued in court, and the judge went along with it hook, line, and sinker, Sean.
Well, it's ironic that I mentioned Sophia. I hold her in high regard. She's the mind behind 9/11 mysteries. Your life and her life have kind of ran a parallel track. Are you guys friendly? Have you spoken to her? Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Sophia. In fact, she is scheduled to be on my show tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic.
The servers are down. It'll probably be on Monday. But, I mean, fantastic. That's on Revolution Radio.
Well, you tell her I said hi. We're longtime friends.
We'll get her back on here in a couple of weeks. Yeah, I think Sophia's sensational. You can scroll down and see what else I may have here, Sean. But the fact is, yeah. Oh, well, how about this? Here you have the FEMA. This is a Connecticut schedule for their exercises. And notice they have that right there at 12/14/2012, FEMA exercise L366. Planning for the needs of children in disasters. I mean, I got that FEMA manual. I have this now. I didn't have it at the time I published the book, but I have it by time now. And I'm submitting it as further evidence. Go down one more, and you'll see they even sent out a map of how to get from Bridgeport down to Dickinson Drive, Sean. I mean, this is so bad. I'm just showing you the amount of evidence I have that it was a FEMA drill. If you go to the next slide, Sean, there's more.
You bet I will. Let me just interject, too, and say that, and I'm going off memory here, right? Going down the memory hole. But it's my recollection that many families in Newton, I believe it was around Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, New Year's Day, something like that, had their mortgages all paid for. Do you recall that?
Well, yeah, there's a chapter about that in the book, you know, all very odd. But what it was, Sean, these families were synthetic. They were brought into Newtown. They were created, typically they weren't even married. And in some cases, you know, the proof of their children, you may or may not recall during the press conference held by Wayne Carver, he explained that the parents weren't allowed to come in contact with their children, but were identified using photographs. Yeah. Well, that was appropriate because most of them only existed in the form of photographs. Just as I've implied, Noah Posner was made out photographs of his older step half brother, Michael Wagner, as a child. Well, Mona Alexis Presley has found evidence some of the parents used photographs of themselves as children to be the dead kids they lost at Sandy Hook. And I also have the manual. Now, I only had this at the time I published the book, Nobody Died. Take a look at the next page. You'll find it interesting. Because you see, it says there, everyone must sign in with a controller on arrival. So we got that sign, everyone must check in. That's to be paid. And it corresponds to the time. See, on the 13th, they had the rehearsal. And then they released it as a live event on the 14th. So all the footage and everything we see is actually from the 13th, except, you know, the media were even there in advance, Sean. We're not supposed to know that either.
But the Let me ask you, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, just more and more proof that the judge would not allow to be entered as evidence. And what happened with Alex Jones was he was subjected to a similar procedure as mine, a summary judgment. None of these Sandy Hook cases, Sean, have been decided on the merits. They've been decided on the basis of presupposition, assumption. In the case of Alex, some alleged failure of discovery. No one can figure out what it is because they had everything he'd ever said. So what was it he failed to provide? So the judge could render a summary judgment, see? But it's only permissible when there are no disputed facts. And I was disputing every fact in the case here, which made mine especially egregious. So the judge had to find all these different techniques to exclude my proof after proof after proof, which he managed to do, as you're finding here.
Now, let me share this, though. At the bottom of the page here, it says, the exercise is expected to end at 11:59 p.m. on December 13th, 2012, and be evaluated on December 14th, 2012, as a real-time event. Now, the way I'm interpreting that is that the evaluation of it as a real-time event would be made by the Mockingbird mainstream media. Now, here's my question. If this event happened in December of 2012 and Obama was president, I recall that at some point in 2012, Obama essentially changed or reversed the Smith-Mundt Act, allowing propaganda to be used and spread domestically against the American people. Previously, that had been illegal. The U.S. government couldn't propagandize to the American people. Now we know they do. But when he changed that Smith-Mundt Act, allowing for blatant propaganda to be used in the homeland domestically against the American people, then I've always wondered how many of these shooting events are propaganda, are exercises to be evaluated by the mainstream media as real, as presented as real to the American people.
Well, let me give you a list of some of those I've investigated by bringing together groups of experts, not only Sandy Hook, but the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas, Uvalde, top shooting in Nashville. Those were all staged events, each and every one. The only body we have in any of those is Las Vegas. We're on the 32nd floor. You have what's supposed to be Stephen Paddock lying in a pool of blood, but there's shell casings on top of the blood. Once you're dead, you know, you're going to stop shooting, right? That's the idea. But the prop master just threw him down on top of the blood, not thinking about it. And some of them, as my keen-eyed colleague Scott Bennett, a former Army Intel and PSYOPs officer, noticed, were for gas-propelled pellet guns. Other were for blanks. You know, the prop master just didn't know the difference and just threw him down.
Give me one second. Hold that thought. Let me just make this point, and I'm going off memory. I think there was a man in charge of the investigation in Vegas by the name of Lombardo. By the way, there's more holes in the official story about the Vegas shooting than, I mean, you could drive a semi truck through any one of these holes. The official story does not add up with the lone gunman, et cetera. And now, guess what? He's the governor of Nevada, Jim.
Yep. He's being rewarded. Maybe he'll be a future president. The bigger the liar, the further you go in American politics. It's outrageous.
Guys, apologies for this real quick break in a word about our sponsor. Are you worried about the future of the U.S. economy? Well, betting markets are now predicting, believe it or not, a Kamala Harris victory, and it's tanking the stock market. With so much uncertainty in the air, it's natural to fret about the security of your retirement savings. But there's one asset that stands the test of time, and that's gold. Now, of course, there is no guarantee with any investment of any kind, so always do your own due diligence. But with a gold IRA from Noble Gold Investments, you can harness the power of precious metals to help protect your financial future. By rolling over your existing IRA or 401k into a self-directed gold or silver IRA, you can enjoy the potential for long-term growth and stability, because they're never going to stop printing. Setting up your gold IRA has never been easier with Noble Gold Investments' streamlined process and expert guidance. And by the way, Noble Gold Investments will give you up to 10 1-ounce silver Trump coins or a 10-ounce silver American flag bar if you open a qualified account. So get moving to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. The link is below. Yeah, it's like those two FBI agents, Stroke and Page. I think Stroke just got $1.2 million and Page got $800,000. So if you play along with the deep state, they're happy to pay you off. If you question the deep state and any of their activities, well, they'll persecute you, as they've done to Tina Peters, Alex Jones, and you, Jim Fetzer.
Yes. Yes, you got it. You got it. Now, this is an affidavit of Brian Davidson. He's a private investigator from Texas. When I carried this case to the Supreme Court, on the grounds of violating my 7th and 14th Amendment rights, I asked Brian to take a look at the evidence, and he got into the Connecticut State Police files. And if you go down, you'll see some of the photographs he uncovered. Right off the bat, by the way, Sean, he found that they had removed all the metadata, which, of course, reports exactly when the date and location where the photograph was taken to make it not admissible in court. But he found a whole lot of evidence go down further, including in hallways where there were supposed to be bodies and blood. There were no bodies. There were no blood. Go down further in classrooms where there'd be supposed to be kids' bodies and blood. There were not only no kids' bodies or blood, but no student desks, student chairs, teacher desks. In other words, you know, he found evidence that it wasn't a mass murder, but that it wasn't even an operating school.
Yeah, for 3 years.
He got it exactly right. He got it exactly right.
I'd heard the school had been closed for 3 years. Is that about right?
Well, we established the school had been closed by 2008, but through my interaction with the participants in the drill, it turns out it was closed in 2006. And it wasn't even an elementary school. Shoshan, they put up the word elementary on the building and let it get weather-worn for years before they pulled the stunt in 2012, 6 years later. So that's just Brian's conclusion at this point. My position is the evidence appears more consistent with the alternative account of a FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control.
And that's Brian Davidson.
Panoramic. Yeah.
Panoramic Investigations. Who's this fellow?
He's a private investigator from Texas. He's done brilliant work with me. He's one of my research colleagues on these false flags. Nashville, Uvalde, the Tops grocery shooting and all that. He just does great work.
Well, and let me make a point. It's not a crime to investigate these types of events and draw your own conclusions as an American, or in this case, as an investigator. It's not a crime for Brian to allege that this was a FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control. That's not a crime, folks, but they are coming after people now, and they are persecuting people and putting them in prison for non-crimes. Case in point, the UK. Don't you dare say anything bad about these immigrants, or you'll do 20 months in prison. Oh, boy. It's a slippery slope into absolute despotism, is it not, James?
Yeah. And then we were looking before, as the next slide, at the FBI Consolidated Crime Report. Notice at the intersection of Renewtown and murder and non-negligent manslaughter, zero. Now, that's 2012. This is 2024. This is a big deal. So if they got it wrong, they would have corrected it by now. But they've actually got accurate reporting. Zero murders in Newtown, meaning there were none in Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012.
And on page 33, here we learn that Judge Remington set aside reports of two forensic document experts who could speak to the authenticity or lack thereof of the death certificates. Thereby, they're preventing Dr. Fetzer from defending himself against this claim of libel.
Exactly. Exactly. Because what I said was true. And by the way, you mentioned my media status. We'll come to that. He never acknowledged that I was media, even though I was being sued over sentences in a book, and three sentences in a book and another smaller book. Yeah, these are just their qualifications, which are awesome. These are guys are both very impressive. You can just scroll through those, Sean. Yeah, I mean, they're there. That's for Larry Wickstrom, and here's Robertson. He's even been through FBI training and blah, blah, blah. I mean, these guys are super good, over, you know, highly, highly qualified. So, I mean, and but they were on my side, so the judge wouldn't allow their reports to be entered as evidence.
Well, and by the way, these same judges, I don't know about this particular judge, but we saw massive election fraud, in my opinion, in Milwaukee, in Madison, in the 2020 election, just as we saw in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in Nevada. We saw election fraud all around the country. And again, it's activist judges that will disallow evidence from being shown to the courts. And the official story regarding 2020 and Trump's team trying to reveal the fraud of the elections, well, the mainstream media will say, he went to court 64 times and his case was dismissed 64 times because he had no evidence. No, the truth was these activist judges would not allow evidence of election fraud to be presented to the courts. They would just dismiss the cases. So we live in an absolute banana republic, brother.
Sean, you got it right again and again. You have the proof. You submit it to the court. It's docketed, meaning they accept it, but the judge simply doesn't allow it to become evidence by not admitting it. So here's where in the oral hearing at the end, go to the next, he dismisses their reports. What does he say? He just found they weren't helpful. They're right at the top. I don't think they were. Here we go. Fourth, Judge Remington denied Dr. Fetzer discovery on his counterclaims. To ensure Dr. Fetzer not discover more proof of the non-occurrence of mass murder or that the decedent had not died at Sandy Hook, Judge Remington took the further step of bifurcating the case to deny Dr. Fetzer discovery on his counterclaims of abuse of process, fraud and theft by deception, and fraud upon the court. A deft maneuver to cut off Dr. Fetzer's access to new evidence that might strengthen his case. This denial of Dr. Fetzer's right to discovery has now been used to claim that Dr. Fetzer had not made allegation of fraud upon the court in a timely manner, brought about by Judge Remington's denial of Dr. Fetzer's discovery rights. Now, abuse of process means they were using the legal process for improper purposes because they really weren't suing me for fraud. They're suing me because they wanted to get control of the book, which when it was banned by Amazon, I released for free as a PDF. So they wanted to get a legal finding against me they could take to those who were allowing the book to be downloaded for free millions of times to staunch the flow.
The next one is the OMG slide. Okay, this one I was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Let me read this. Judge Remington refused to admit proof, as James sees it, that Noah Posner is a fiction. Dr. Fetzer repeatedly advanced proof that alleged decedent Noah Posner was not a real person, but rather a legal fiction created out of photographs of his purported older half-brother, Michael Vabner. Dr. Fetzer raised the issue by moving to expand DNA testing to include not just Noah Posner and Leonard Posner, but Michael Vabner and Reuben Vabner, whom Dr. Fetzer had concluded to be the basis for Noah, quote unquote, and for Leonard, exhibit O. The fact has now been substantiated by the affidavit of Brian Davidson, PI, who has also established that the party who testified as Leonard Posner in Madison is not the same person as the Leonard Posner of Sandy Hook. That's a jaw-dropping moment there in this thing, Jim.
Yeah. Well, this has enormous importance, not least of all, because it implicates Posner's attorneys in the subordination of perjury. And you just start looking here. I've got this slide showing that Noah was fabricated out of Michael Vabner. There's a photograph of Michael Vabner. Keep going. Just roll. Sean, another photograph of Michael Vabner. Now compare him with Noah. See, it was Kelly who noticed there was a resemblance there, and they might be the same person. So I had an expert here superimposed. Keep going, and you'll find. Yeah, we were able to establish. This is actually a GIF, but it won't play here because I didn't put in the GIF. But here you see Noah turning into Michael Vabner, or how Michael Vabner was used as a basis to create the fictional entity Noah Posner, the decedent at Sandy Hook. And guess what? As the next slide shows, Michael Vabner's alive and well and doing stand-up comedy in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So he's not dead, Sean. He's not dead.
Why? Is the allegation that Michael Vabner is also dead?
Well, the point is, Michael Vabner was a basis for Noah Posner, who's supposed to be deceased at six, right?
Right. So your point is, if Michael Vabner's pictures as a child were used and purported to be Noah Posner, your point is that this young man grew up and now he's a comedian. But beyond that, I want to make the point. If the official story is true, may God rest the soul of Noah Posner and all of those children who were allegedly murdered by Adam Lanza in December of 2012. God rest their souls. If the official story is true, I say that with all sincerity. God rest their souls. We are not bad people here for asking these questions. I think Jim has the right to ask these questions, but evidently the courts disagree. The courts are going to go.
Well, we're being scammed. We're being scammed, John. This is a monster fraud perpetrated by the government I'm exposing. But they don't want it exposed, and they've corrupted the courts to the extent that they become tools of the government to suppress information that every American is entitled to know. You'll love this one, Sean. Go for it.
Well, the judge refused to acknowledge Dr. Fetzer as a media person, and that lowered the bar for finding Fetzer guilty of libel, right?
Yes. Admit they didn't have to prove I was negligent. I wasn't negligent. They couldn't have proven I was negligent. But so he just didn't rule. But I give him monster evidence, all this evidence that I was an investigative journalist. Read to lower the bar for finding Dr. Fetzer liable. Judge Remington declined to rule that Dr. Fetzer had media standing as an investigative journalist, even though Dr. Fetzer had submitted a brief laying out his experience as an investigative journalist and reporter for decades, including paid assignments. Even more blatantly, Dr. Fetzer was being sued over three sentences in a book he had co-edited and another in a separate publication to which he'd contributed. How could Judge Remington, who insists that he read every document submitted to the court, have missed this?
I don't think he missed it.
You don't think you missed it, huh?
I don't think you missed it.
This is just where I lay out. You can just scroll down. This is just where I lay out all my background as a journalist and all, you know, some about my publication, Founding Scholars for 9/11 Truth, a host of other stuff. You know, I've got 8 books with the Moon Rock books, blah, blah, blah. Just absurd. Okay, good. Nice. 7. When Dr. Fetzer tried to expose the imposter, he was sanctioned. Among the most important tells that Judge Remington was acting in concert with the Posner attorneys is that when Dr. Fetzer attempted to expose the party who had testified under the name of Leonard Posner as an imposter, because he was, I don't know why we're missing a little bit of the text here, he was too young and too small, and sent a copy of the video deposition to Wolfgang Helbig for confirmation. Judge Remington not only took offense and held Dr. Fetzer in contempt of court, adding attorney fees in the amount of $650,000 to the $450,000 that would be awarded by the jury for his purported defamation of Leonard Posner, thereby protecting himself and the Posner attorneys when Dr. Fetzer had told the truth. And now there's a whole mass of evidence here you can go through. You know, I mean, proof that wasn't admitted in evidence, Sean, in this series of slides you got there now. I mean, good, good stuff. You're going to even see here, Sean, how when they wanted to put him up on 60 Minutes. They brought in a professional to reconstruct his face to make the fake Leonard Posner look more like the Sandy Hook Leonard Posner. This is just Wolfgang Zappa, David. Go to the next slide. You'll see the photograph. Now, this is the Sandy Hook Posner. And notice the photograph is even courtesy of Leonard Posner. So that's what he should look like. And that's in 2012. Now go forward.
Okay, guys, we're getting into the area of woo here. But I'll remind you, it was Franz Kafka who said, the truth is always an abyss. And I think maybe he said that because in a court of law where courts are crooked, well, the truth will be made an abyss by a crooked court.
Nice. So there's a guy who testified. There's a guy who testified in court on the left, and there's a real Leonard Posner on the right.
Well, two observations. If the man on the left is the man on the right, then he hasn't aged much in 12 years. But his ears
changed. He's grown younger, Sean. He's grown younger.
And his ears have obviously changed. It's a little bit like the multiple versions of Joe Biden.
Yeah, keep going. Keep going to the next slide. You got another comparison. There you go. Maybe you can center it a little better.
So
wait
a minute. So the man on the left, that is Posner from 2012?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've aged a lot in 12 years, but this man on the left hasn't aged if it's the same man on the right. In fact, you're right. He looks a bit younger.
That's right. So what are... Here's what, this is Brian Davidson, another affidavit. The simplest proof of fraud upon the court is that, as I protested at the time, the person who appeared in Dane County and testified under the name of Leonard Posner was not the same person whose image had been published millions of times worldwide. He was younger, thinner, and to put it most simply, just a smaller person. Notice he looks older in 2012 than he did in 2019. And when Leonard Posner was featured on 60 Minutes, they used the celebrated artist K2 Hero, who has won award after award, to make up the subject to make him look more like Leonard Posner. This is him doing his thing, Sean. You're into it.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. This actually confused me when I looked at your brief. Just let's be real clear about what's going on here. So this renowned makeup artist is doing what in this photograph?
He's taken the younger guy who testified in Madison to make him look like the older guy from Sandy Hook.
That just leaves me speechless. Is that a fact? You know that for a fact?
Yeah, of course it's a fact. This is absolutely a fact. Keep going. You'll see the proof yourself. My goodness. I mean, they went all out. Can you imagine how much it must have cost? There he is. See, he's trying to make it more look more like the Sandy Hook Posner. They did that for putting him on 60 Minutes on national television.
Oh, my. OMG. Another OMG moment.
Yes. 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 Judge Remington has been so eager to avoid his exposure, he's now violated Dr. Patzer's due process rights by abandoning the Wisconsin Rules of Civil Procedure, Chapter 802, not once or twice, but three times. This goes far beyond the appearance of partiality and bias.
Can we back up? Let me show you something.
Sure.
Question for you. I'm just really, my mouth is still a bit agape over the makeup artist involvement 60 Minutes. So let me just.
I know, it's stunning.
Yeah, just to be clear for the audience now. So imagine this. If you're sitting in court like Dr. Fetzer in Madison, Wisconsin, and the trial's not the trial. You can barely call this a trial. It wasn't televised. I want to ask you this question really specifically. The man on the right, that man with the glasses, was he in the courtroom at any time, the same time you were? Did you see this man in that court in Madison, Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. And of course, during the oral deposition, I was there the whole time. That took over 3 hours. And when the trial for damages, he was in the courtroom with me too. He was there at the table for the plaintiff.
Okay. So, audience, imagine yourself in an episode of Black Mirror, okay? But you're Dr. Jim Fetzer, and it's real-life Black Mirror. So this man, purported to be Leonard Posner, was in Madison, Wisconsin, in court with Fetzer. But then 60 Minutes peddles this guy out and tells the American people that's Leonard Posner?
Is that what you're saying?
Actually air on 60 Minutes? Did they ever broadcast
it? Oh, sure. Absolutely, 100%. Yes, it did.
What are the protections that someone has if they're targeted on the internet?
There is very little that you can do, actually. And even when you try to do something, most of the time it gets ignored. Nothing gets done.
And how did that make you feel when you know that the guy who showed up in court didn't look at all like this guy?
Well, I did. I wasn't aware that 60 Minutes were doing this at the time it happened. I only learned retrospectively. But here it is, and you know, it's in Brian Davidson's affidavit. He lays it all out. This is just wonderful stuff. Let's see what else we may have. Here we go. Relief sought. By suppressing the affidavit of Kelly Watt, dismissing proof that nobody died at Sandy Hook and that Noah Posner was a legal fiction, setting aside the reports of two forensic document experts, denying Dr. Fetzer discovery on his counterclaims, failing to acknowledge Dr. Fetzer as a media person, and holding him in contempt when he sought to expose the imposter witness, together with his more recent procedural violations, to suppress a proof of his egregious misconduct as quickly as possible. Judge Remington has egregiously violated Wisconsin Statute Chapter 757, General Provision Concerning Courts of Record, Judges, Attorneys, and Clerks, under Section 757.19(2)(g), Disqualification of Judge. Dr. Fetzer therefore again moves that Judge Remington recuse himself from this case and any further associated proceedings, submitting the 31st day of July, 2024. It is in the hands of the court. And here, yeah, this is just, if you want to learn more about the Alex Jones case, you can go to my blog and find the article, Fake News at Truth versus Alex Jones. If you're scrolling from the front page, you go down to the bottom. I think it's the fifth page now. And you can download the redacted version of the book. You can download the redacted version of the book there. I've made it available. Yeah. There you go, Sean. You're on top of it, my friend. You can download it to your own desktop. Sean, I can't appreciate you enough for following up on this, man. I mean, what a case. And the American people, it's got to boggle their minds that this is how justice is administered in the United States.
Yeah, no, it's boggling my mind. And I knew things were bad. I mean, we've all witnessed it firsthand as they persecute Trump over non-crimes, as they persecute Alex Jones over non-crimes, as they persecute Tina Peters over non-crimes, Steve Bannon over non-crimes. Steve Bannon's in prison right now. They're persecuting absolutely everybody who the system perceives to be an enemy to officialdom. So that literally is Kafkaesque. That literally is. I feel like we're living in an episode of Black Mirror. And so that's why I wanted to get you on, because you just lived, you're living a real life episode of Black Mirror, Doc.
Well, Sean, let me say what I have done by all these submissions, which obviously rattled the judge. I've set up a situation where the Wisconsin courts have to decide whether they value their integrity, given the blatancy of these violations, which are, I mean, these are absolutely stunning. They are inexcusable, each and every one. Given the blatancy of the violation of my due process and other constitutional rights, whether they value the integrity or are reasserting the integrity of the courts more than they do, compromising themselves to run cover-up for a FEMA drill presented as mass murder. And here's the beauty of it, Sean. They don't even have to decide whether Sandy Hook was real. All they have to decide is, was I given a fair shake in the courts? To which the answer is obvious. So they need to send it back, recuse a judge, give me a trial for jury. They have got nothing. I mean, they fabricated the case from the beginning, and once I figured out how they fabricated, I was in a position to go back and reopen the case, and that's where we are now, Sean. I figured it out.
Yeah, you have. You've definitely figured a lot of things out throughout your life. And you've been on the front lines trying to do that along with people like Sophia Smallstorm. And I want to just show, is this your website? I had to find it using Bing because it certainly doesn't come up using Google.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Well,
JamesHFetzer.org. Yeah, absolutely. JamesHFetzer.org.
All right. Well, do you need anything from our audience? I mean, I know that you got this judgment against you, but that doesn't mean you can, you know, Alex Jones has $1 billion judgment against him and they're not going to get that money. He doesn't have it. So what can
we do? That's one thing about being a poor guy. I don't have any assets they can claim. And let me tell you this, Sean, they actually tried to garnish from a legal defense fund. These are people who donated money to support my legal effort, where I state right on the website at givesendgo.com/fundingfetzer that this money is not going to be used to pay off the judgment. I mean, why would they want to donate money to me to fight the case, fight the judgment, and instead have it used to pay off the judgment? So get this. The court, in this separate effort, sought to do that, not only to use money from my legal defense fund, but to use my wife's part of our federal and state income tax return and reimbursement she'd received for going shopping with our daughter and a gift she had for $100. And I protested this. And I went to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals came back and said they had to have a hearing that they'd skipped having where I could explain all these things and to render an opinion that was consistent with case law in Wisconsin, which says you cannot take money from non-debtors. And he went ahead and did it again. So I've got that back at the Court of Appeals. They violated the Court of Appeals' own directive not to do this, and they've done it again, Sean. And the fact that he violated three times, you know, the procedure of motion, response, reply, that's also back to the Court of Appeals. So the Court of Appeals and the Circuit Court in Wisconsin are aware there's something going on here. In all these cases were closed at the same time when I submitted the final brief, my defendant's reply we've just reviewed, and it's now in the hands of the Wisconsin courts. And I'm betting, since it's just a question of did I get a fair shake when I obviously did not, they don't have to decide whether Sandy Hook was real or not. But obviously the evidence I've adduced is overwhelming that it was a fraud. All they have to decide is, was this done in accordance with the procedures of civil law in Wisconsin? And they were not. So I'm optimistic. They're going to find it in my favor. They're going to reverse and send it back for a new judge in a trial, which probably will never come to pass because they're not going to want to pursue it, given I figured out how the hell they did it, Sean.
Well, we definitely appreciate the fire in your belly and your willingness to fight. Honestly, thank you so much, Jim, for what you do and for standing up for yourself and thereby standing up for the rest of us. Because I got to tell folks, you know, I keep saying that the election in November is truly a matter of life and death. And I mean that literally. Vote as though your life depended on it, but get ready for another one of the freest and fairest, most transparent elections in human history. That's what you're going to be told when they say Harris won. I think that's what's coming. And if they implant her in the Oval Office, I don't think there's any stopping World War III, Jim. That's what really keeps me up at night.
John, they stole the election in 2020. They stole the election in 2022. Why not do it again in 2024? And let me just end by complimenting you. You show such intelligence and discerning judgment in the issues you pursue, and you do it in such a thoughtful, inquiring way that brings out the crucial issues. I must compliment you. You would not know, but I'd long wanted to be on one of your reports, Sean, because you do such a great job. And I just want to say how much I appreciate your efforts to get the truth out to the American people. You are doing a great job.
Oh, my. Wow. I can't tell you how much that means to me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And you've been on the show in the past, but thank you. And I wish that we had hooked up earlier in your career when you were still a professor in Duluth, because I live in the same state. And now we've got that lunatic Waltz that they want to implant as a president. The man is an absolute.
There's rumor they're going to try to dump Waltz in Chicago. They might even try to get rid of Kamala because she's such a disaster. She's vacuous. Sean, I spent 35 years evaluating students' intellectual abilities. She is dumb as a rock. She's a foremost moron I've ever seen. That she could be at this high office is just insulting to the American people. And she never received a single vote for president, not a single vote. It's just outrageous.
No, it is. It's outrageous. It's a humiliation ritual. And I've heard smart people say that. I think I said it maybe before some of the people I just heard recently say it. But I've been saying that the dog king, Joe Biden, that is part of the humiliation ritual. And then to dump him and to elevate her, that communist who doesn't even actually qualify to be president for a number of different reasons. who dropped out of the primary in 2020 because she couldn't get any support from her own party. She didn't get a single vote. And now I call her the dog queen. It's all part of the humiliation of our nation, brother.
Sean, I think you got it right. Yeah, she didn't even make it to Iowa. Now she's being elevated to be a candidate for president. Sean, keep it up. Great job.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so very much for coming on back today. Thanks for sharing all this great information with us. And I'll leave a link to your website below. Keep in touch. Happy to have you on again anytime, sir.
You got it, Sean. My pleasure.
All right. God bless you. Our guest has been Dr. James Fetzer. I'll leave a link below, guys, and check out the books. He's written a lot of great books. Support the author if you can. Support the truth if you can, because as Kafka said, the truth is always an abyss when left up to the deep state and crooked courts. Friends, I'll remind you every single day, check us out to get the real news, the antidote to corporate propaganda in the CIA, Mockingbird, mainstream media at sgtreport.com. 24/7, friends, we're there for you. Thanks so much for being here. God bless.
We just saw that Brian Terry of Fast and Furious, How I Became a Whistleblower, the killer's conviction was just overturned. And we just saw that Peter Strzok got $1.2 million from the DOJ. Is the deep state takes care of its own here. And I think that's what we're seeing happen here as well. But their corruption makes them real incompetent, and they're in trouble, and they're trying to make this look right. And the only thing they can do now is to really provoke more of a response as they continue to fall apart.